This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
This hour, we've been talking about the immigration debate, over DACA, over sanctuary cities, and over deportation itself. Who should we be deporting and how? One thing that's not always noted here is that the causes of immigration are changing. An increasing number of people are coming here not just for a job or a better life, they're fleeing for their lives. In Central America, instability and powerful gangs have created absolutely appalling levels of crime and murder. Immigrants from Honduras, from Guatemala and El Salvador all come here seeking asylum, saying that if they're sent back to their countries, they're likely to be killed. The New Yorker's Sarah Stillman has been leading a project with other journalists tracking the fates of deportees back in their home countries. We just published a long article in The New Yorker by Sarah, and it makes a very sobering read. And in that piece, she tells of the fate of a young man named Nelson Avila Lopez.
Should I just leave it on the table? So first of all, we've already started a recording. So we want to make sure that she's comfortable with that.
I recently found myself in Pasadena, California, in a tiny law office on the top floor of a little building right above a bridal shop. And I was there to talk to a woman named Ana Lopez.
Do you need me to translate as she is speaking?
And she works as a housekeeper, and she came into the room clutching her gold purse, looking quite nervous. And she was there to tell me about her son, Nelson, who she last saw when he was 20 years old.
Tenía felicidad.
He had happiness in him. He would say things that would make people laugh.
El poco tiempo que yo estuve con él, sí.
The short period of time that I was with him, he was like that.
Does she remember a time that he made her laugh or smile or something he did that was fun or funny?
Sí. Era un chiquito, llevaba una candelita.
He was a joker, so he gave me a very small cake with a teeny tiny candle.
Eso sí me acuerdo.
That I remember.
Yo pues me siento alegre.
So Ana and her son had spent the majority of their lives apart. She left him to go to the U.S. to make money cleaning houses when he was just about 4 years old. And Nelson lived actually with his aunt back in Honduras. Yeah, this is common for families in Honduras, but for Ana, there was an added complication of leaving her kid back home, which is that there was this tremendous rise of extreme gang violence. So starting as early as age 9, Nelson starts getting recruited by the gangs in his neighborhood. And for a young person there, it's nearly inescapable. Essentially, it really is life or death. You're faced with this choice, convert to join the gangs and join us in persecuting other people, or you will be persecuted and potentially lose your life. And then for Nelson, there proved to be this added layer of complexity because as he got older, he started to discover that he was gay, which exposed him to an even further level of potential violence from the gangs.
Mm. And did he share what that was like for him?
He had more of a communication with my sister, and he didn't want to go into too much detail with me because he said that he didn't want to make me sad.
Pero yo sí sabía que él sufría.
But I did know that he suffered. How could you tell?
¿Cómo sabía usted?
Por lo que, como me hablaba él.
The way that he used to speak to me.
Como triste de su vida cuando él era un niño.
He would speak to me very sadly when he was a little boy.
So as the gang pressure ratcheted up, Nelson reached the point where he knew he had to get out of there. The gangs were threatening his life, and they were making it really clear that they were going to try to pin their crimes on him. So he decided he's going to make this journey as a kid, by himself, as a gay kid, on this one of the most dangerous journeys in the world. So he makes the journey, and he crosses over, and he actually does end up reuniting with his mom in California.
When we went to go pick him up, he said, I want to be with you here.
Do you remember what you were feeling when you saw him at the airport when he first came?
¿Qué sintió usted cuando lo vio en el aeropuerto ese día?
Emoción.
Excitement.
Sí. Y él lo mismo.
And him, the same, I know.
Lo único que él
pues le decía. So this was in 2011, and Nelson and his family were really hopeful that things would work out for them, that he would put in an asylum application and get to stay there with his family. So he started doing the things that a young kid would do. He went to school. He got a landscaping job to try to help support his mother, who had supported him for so long. But it turns out a lot of asylum seekers and other undocumented immigrants are pretty ripe targets for scammers. And it looks like essentially an attorney they hired gave them really bad legal advice. And Nelson was never informed about his court date, and he thus didn't show up. And that placed him on the conveyor belt for deportation. So, you know, more than a year later, it's early in the morning, and suddenly there's a knock on the family's door.
And where were you when this was happening?
¿En dónde estaba usted cuando esto estaba sucediendo?
Estábamos acostados porque yo llegué.
We were in bed because they got there in the morning.
Y luego no respetaron porque encima de eso estaba mi hija mayor.
And they didn't respect.
Y también a ella se la querían llevar.
My older daughter was there and they wanted to take her too.
Ella les dijo a ellos como ellos.
She asked them why they were doing that. She speaks English.
Y una la muchacha le dijo. Deja el teléfono.
They told her to put down her cell phone, and she said, why? And la oficial?
Sí.
The officer threw her phone in her face.
And what was going through your mind as all of this was happening?
Quedé en shock.
I was in shock.
No sabía qué hacer.
I didn't know what to do.
Se lo llevaron sin zapatos, sin camisa, nomás andaba con short.
They took him without shoes or a shirt. He was just wearing his shorts.
Anna was really desperate to make sure her son was not deported. So she hires another lawyer, a really competent guy, and he gets a judge to block the deportation and to give Nelson another chance to apply for asylum. So Nelson is still sitting at the detention center, and Anna thinks, you know, everything is going to be okay because now they've actually got a chance to build up the asylum case. And the judge has said very explicitly, Nelson cannot be deported. But then, you know, for some reason, Nelson was sitting in his cell one day, and they come to place him in shackles and load him off towards a plane, and they deport him back to Honduras. It's not clear why immigration authorities defied a judicial order in Nelson's case, but it is pretty clear that he should not have been deported. And it appears that it may have been just sloppy paperwork or some lack of oversight in a system that's moving really, really quickly with these cases. But either way, he was suddenly in a plane heading back to a country where he feared for his life. So when he arrived in Honduras, he was instantly detained by Honduran authorities because they considered him to be gang-affiliated, even though he had fled gang violence in the first place. So this is actually pretty common. The Honduran government is able to instantly incarcerate people, even based on tattoos alone and the suspicion of gang affiliation. And so he was sent to this very notorious Honduran prison, and he was held there without any charges. And at that point, his mom writes a letter to the U.S. government, and she says very explicitly, I fear for his life. He's going to die if he stays there. You need to get him back.
Que él sentía mucho miedo.
He was very afraid.
Que él no sentía confianza.
He couldn't trust anybody.
Que no le fuera a pasar nada.
I would send him money so that nothing would happen to him.
She was really hoping that she could get him back to the U.S., as had been promised to her by the people who had made the mistake of deporting him. And in that time period while she's waiting, a few months go by, and one day she's working at her housekeeping job, and she gets a call from her sister saying, yeah, there's been a terrible fire at the prison, and, you know, don't worry yet, because we don't know what's happened to Nelson. Immediately, Anna flies down there, waits in Honduras with hundreds of other families because it turns out that more than 350 people had died in this gang-controlled prison after an intentional fire. And she waits and she waits, and eventually she gets the DNA testing back that Nelson had been found clinging on to another inmate and had perished in the fire.
That's so difficult.
Sí, fue bien dificultoso y muy triste.
Very sad.
Muy triste. Nunca me
I'm never gonna forget it.
So Nelson had come here at 17 seeking to be safe. And instead, what he got was being very speedily deported to his death. And in many ways, his case exemplifies the real stakes of these speedy deportations because, you know, it was essentially by accident, by some kind of clerical error. But that's exactly the kind of incident that we're likely to see more of as we speed up the pipeline for deportations. And that leaves a huge cloud of uncertainty around Anna and her other children going forward under Trump.
Mi niña está bien afectada.
My daughter is very affected because of what happened.
Sí. Ahorita que ganó el señor este, me preguntó que qué iba a pasar conmigo.
Right now that this man won, she keeps asking me what is going to happen with me.
Yo le dije, no te preocupes, no va a pasar nada.
Don't worry, nothing's gonna happen.
Anna Lopez, talking with The New Yorker's Sarah Stillman. Sarah's article, When Deportation is a Death Sentence, was just published, and you can find it at newyorker.com.